Hello, this is the second introductory podcast to Conduct of Business, and it's short. I just want to tease out some ideas about client classification, because the bulk of the Conduct of Business sourcebook, COBS, in the FSA handbook, really is the treatment of clients, and I discuss this in my book in detail in Chapter 10. What a firm has to do is to come to know its client and understand its level of expertise in financial matters and treat it suitably as a result. So for students studying any of my courses in this area, what you're being asked to do is to look at factual scenarios and think, well, has this customer been treated suitably? In so doing, we're looking at overarching principles from MiFID, that the firm must act honestly, fairly and professionally, and more generally with integrity, under the PRIN sourcebook, that any communications must be fair, clear and not misleading, that the firm must act in the best interests of the customer, and that the firm must achieve best execution of all transactions for the customer, find the best price and so on. So with those positive obligations as a background, the firm has to come to know its client and assess that client's level of expertise and so forth. So the heart of Conduct of Business regulation really is identifying the needs and level of expertise of each customer. And that's a division generally between different categories of client. Retail clients, I'd suggest, is the first category. That's ordinary individuals or companies without expertise in financial matters. Secondly then, professional clients, people with some expertise in financial matters, but who aren't financial institutions themselves. And then thirdly, market counterparties, who are other financial institutions with expertise in the appropriate financial markets. The technical division between these categories we'll come to consider in detail. I discuss in detail in Chapter 10 in the book. In essence, though, the regulations require that investment firms assess the knowledge and expertise of each client according to those broad categorisations, and that those investment firms then deal with each client appropriately or suitably, taking into account that client's objectives and the suitability of any investment product for that client as a result. So, the first tier, if you like, is looking at the level of expertise in financial matters. A second tier is considering the client's objectives in acquiring the investment product and ensuring that you are providing a suitable investment product as a result. It might be useful at this juncture to consider very briefly a case called Bankers Trust against Damala, which I discuss in detail in the book at various points, and is on the handout for my own students. A Bankers Trust and Damala involve Bankers Trust, who are legendary for developing very sophisticated financial products, really very whizzy stuff, using very complex mathematical models, and they really are very good at that kind of infrastructural stuff. Well done them. They went into business, or rather did business, I beg your pardon, with Damala. Now, Damala are from Indonesia. They are a financial institution, but they're a very small financial institution compared to Leviathans like Bankers Trust. And though a financial institution didn't have particular expertise in derivatives markets. So here we have clearly a tricky one. Now, this is all before COBS and the Conduct of Business Regulation we're talking about. This is back in 1996, this case is reported. So it's early 90s, this business is going on. There was some Know Your Client regulation there, but the regulation that we're talking about wasn't in force. A number of claims were brought, at common law and in equity, which we discuss in later podcasts, against Bankers Trust, suggesting Bankers Trust had committed fraud, they'd misrepresented products and all kinds of things. For our purposes, what we need to understand is that Bankers Trust were selling complex interest rate swap products to Damala. Now, Damala claimed it hadn't understood that these interest rate swaps would be very sensitive to movements in interest rates. Now, I would suggest that anyone that had studied any kind of derivatives at business school or wherever else for about 10 minutes will understand that interest rate swaps become more or less valuable depending on where interest rates move. if you're entitled to receive an amount of money when interest rates go down. If interest rates go down, you'll make money. If interest rates go up, you'll lose money. That's all we need to understand about interest rate swaps. Have a look at the glossary if you want a longer discussion. Anyway, De Mahler bought what we referred to in the ongoing litigation as high-octane swaps, meaning very complex swaps, very complex mathematics. And the question was whether or not De Mahler could possibly have understood the risks involved, or whether De Mahler were entitled to say, we're not experts in these products, you, Bankers Trust, should have explained all these risks to us. Now, usefully, Mr. Justice Mance, who gave the decision in Bankers Trust and De Mahler, amongst all the various arguments at common law and inequity, looked at the Bank of England London Code, which was the regulatory principle in effect at the time, and was guided by what the Bank of England London Code said that financial institutions like Bankers Trust should have done in these circumstances. And looking at the fact that Bankers Trust were dealing with a financial institution, Mr. Justice Mance was prepared to hold that there was no obligation to explain all the risks to this customer. Bankers Trust was instead entitled to rely on the fact that they were a financial institution, they should have been able to assess some of these basic risks for themselves. Although Mr. Justice Mance did recognise that this was a difficult borderline category, because this was a financial institution that had little understanding or knowledge. One interesting idea that I think that comes out of this is that Bankers Trust said, amongst other things, well, we gave all our pricing models to De Mahler. In effect, we gave them a disc with all the maths on, and they could have worked all that out for themselves. And it raises an interesting question. If De Mahler doesn't have the expertise to understand that maths and to understand how these products function, then giving them a copy of a mathematical model to say this is by reference to which we have calculated the pricing of this product and everything else doesn't really help. It's a little bit like saying, I always think to a dog, the word biscuit. If you've ever spent any time among dogs, you know that the word biscuit has a magic allure for them. They hear the word biscuit, they sit up. Certainly any dogs ever lived in England, because they know that biscuit means, biscuit, fun, nice thing. And doesn't necessarily mean that the dog understands what biscuit involves. It doesn't mean that the dog understands how a biscuit is made, where the biscuit comes from, whether the biscuit is good or bad for it. They hear the word biscuit, have an automatic response. There's quite a profound philosophical question here, really, about what do we know, what do we understand when we hear a word and we have an association with it. It's a difficult question for financial regulation as well. Because the whole idea about measuring levels of expertise means that people might have a vague idea as to what the risks are. We might have read all the bottom of the adverts and the posters on the tube that say that this investment may go down as well as up. But do we really understand, not just that we may win or lose, but what the particular risks are, what the particular sensitivities of this product are? And so De Mahler were claiming that they didn't understand that when American interest rates, the Fed funds rates, moved, that would cause them an enormous loss. And so there is a difficult question there, and the way in which we muddle through that in conduct of business regulation is to try and classify the client's level of expertise. So I think Bankers Trust and De Mahler is an interesting illustration of how the common law has had a go at looking at that idea. We'll discuss many other cases in the lectures in that vein. But that's also the work that the Conduct of Business Sourcebook is doing. And this is why it's important and difficult for investment firms. Because the investment firms have to conduct this calculation exercise for themselves. Yeah, it's not on rails, they're not told exactly what to do. Instead, they have to consider what are the client's needs and are we treating them appropriately by reference to all the principles that I set out at the beginning of the podcast. So that really is quite difficult. And this is one of the reasons I suggest that COBS and MIFID present a sea change in financial regulation.